You're listening to Nitty Gritty Nursing with Nurse M, where she breaks down the nitty gritty basics of nursing concepts. All right, hello, and welcome back to Nitty Gritty Nursing with Nurse M. In this episode, what I'm going to sort of break down are seizures and the different sorts of seizures that someone might see in the clinical setting or that you might be learning about in your studies, and what we're going to try to break through the pie again and try to navigate through the different types of seizures, how we treat them, and what these patients might look like, and some fun nursing considerations that one should probably take into account. And I think in order to start this off properly, we just need to all have a basic understanding of what a seizure is, which is just an abnormal or some sort of a sudden excessive discharge of electrical activity inside the brain. Now, seizures in and of themselves can be either acute or chronic in nature. When we talk about the chronic-based types of seizures, that is what most people correlate and associate epilepsy to be. If someone has epilepsy, they typically have some sort of chronic-based seizure. And that epilepsy is really characterized by that chronic seizure activity, and it basically is indicative that the brain or the central nervous system has some degree of irritation on it. The acute manifestation of a seizure is just that. Someone doesn't have a seizure, and then suddenly they have a seizure, and they've never had a seizure, they don't have a history of a seizure, no one in their family has ever had seizures before, and they just acutely have a seizure that we then have to address. So that's chronic versus acute. Now, what causes seizures? And I think literally anything you could probably think of has the potential to cause a seizure. So genetic factors. Someone who's been in some sort of trauma accident and they've banged their head really hard. If there's sort of that instigating activity in the brain that causes it to become, you know, kind of crazed in there, we have the potential to elicit that is abnormal and sudden excessive discharge of electrical activity that is then a seizure. So genetic factors, trauma, tumors, of course. There are some circulatory or metabolic disorders that can cause seizures, toxicity, infections, someone who is maybe an alcoholic and is going through acute alcohol withdrawal. Perhaps you are an individual of the pediatric variety and you have a really high fever that spikes all of a sudden. You can get a febrile seizure. So there are so many different causes of seizure. But if you look back again to that root kind of understanding of what a seizure is, of just being that abnormal and sudden discharge of electrical activity, and whether or not it is chronically occurring or acutely occurring, we have a good sort of platform by which to bounce off of this and to get into talking about the different types of seizures. Now, one thing, I'm going to briefly touch on it right now, and then I'm going to come back to it. One concerning potential feature of any sort of seizure is something that you might have heard before called status epilepticus, which is essentially just a rapid succession of epileptic spasms without intervals of consciousness, and it lasts for more than 5 minutes typically. And someone who's having seizures and they flip into this status epilepticus where they're just seizing constantly for about 5 minutes, it is a true medical emergency. And I think that the interesting component about this is that any seizure, whether it's chronic or acute, any seizure type has the potential to result in the development of status epilepticus. And if it occurs, right, so if someone flips into that, brain damage may happen because of the excessive electrical impulses that are firing, but also because in the middle of a seizure, right, when that brain is just discharging all of that electrical activity, what is it not doing? It's not telling your body to breathe. So now we're dealing with a little bit of respiratory depression, and that has now the potential to result in hypoxemia. Not only that, but if you're seizing and you've got the like classic tonic-clonic seizure that's brewing, well, now you're also burning through a lot of muscle action. And if you're not breathing and doing the exchange with waste product, now you can start to see how things get worse much, much more quickly. So let's talk about the different types of seizures, okay? And this is going to be kind of the pie, because in order to talk about how a patient may or may not present if they develop or start having a seizure, you really have to understand the different types of seizures. Because there are so many, people present different ways. And if you know the different types of seizures, it will guide you in how these patients may present. Basically, seizures are just boiled down into two different categories. They either have a generalized seizure or a partial seizure. If someone is having a generalized seizure, it is involving both sides of the brain and right from the start, and these patients all lose consciousness. Versus if they end up with a partial seizure, which is actually the most common, it's that a partial seizure only involves part of the brain, and these particular patients may also experience unusual taste and smells or like strange feelings when they're getting ready to or while they're having the seizure. So those are the two different categories. We've got generalized, using the whole brain, both sides of the brain, and they lose consciousness. Partial, most common, but only involves just part of the brain. If we talk about generalized seizures, okay, there are four categories of it, but really only two of them are frequently spoken about, at least from what I have learned in my own studies. The first one is the classic tonic-clonic seizure, and it is by far the easiest to identify. These patients may start with some sort of aura, but essentially that tonic-clonic phase that they go through, during the tonic phase, there's that stiffening and rigidity of the muscles, which will last for about 10 to 20 seconds, and then it's followed by that clonic phase of hyperventilation and jerking of the extremities. When someone has one of these types of seizures, they lose consciousness. Recovery, like coming bouncing back from this type of seizure, can take sometimes hours. So that's generalized tonic-clonic, and then you also have absent seizures, which is in the generalized category. And these are brief seizures that last a few seconds, and there's often no loss or change in muscle tone that someone can see, and they can also occur several times a day. And this is usually when those people look like they're daydreaming. And so it's more common in the pediatric population than the adults, especially if you've ever seen like the kid out in the baseball field, just kind of like staring off and looking like they're daydreaming. Sometimes those individuals are actually having absent seizures. The other two categories of seizures are going to be myoclonic and atonic. And myoclonic seizures actually present as these really brief, generalized jerking or stiffening of the extremities. And the issue with both the myoclonic and the atonic is that the myoclonic, right, it's this jerking and stiffening of the extremities, and it can cause people to fall if they are in a standing or a sitting position potentially, versus atonic, where there's just a sudden loss of muscle tone, and these individuals will also fall as a result. So when we talk about partial seizures, so generalized, tonic-clonic, absent, myoclonic, and atonic, partial seizures, which are the most common, you either have simple partial or you have complex partial. And in your simple partial seizure, right, it produces these sensory symptoms that are then often preceded by motor symptoms, and it's all localized to like one specific area. In complex partial seizures, this is usually some sort of psychomotor seizure, and it's in an area of the brain that is most commonly involved, being the temporal area. And it's characterized by periods of like altered behaviors that the patient's not aware is having. And so, you know, you kind of have to wonder about that. You can ask these patients, you know, if they're smelling toast. That would be one of those unusual tastes or smells that these patients have before they get ready to seize. Irregardless, when we think about those, that's how they're going to present. And it's all based on what type of seizure the individual's having. Now, in the nurse's role, if your patient's getting ready to seize, the nurse's role, it really depends on the type of seizure. Because if someone is having, for example, a simple partial seizure, and they're just like really smelling some toast, maybe they, you know, you're not going to jump on them versus in someone who would be having a tonic-clonic seizure. And so really the nurse's role, like irregardless of what type of seizure it is, we really want to make sure that we are observing and documenting what is actually happening. And patient safety is crucial, whether that's putting them in a side lying position. We don't put restraints on seizure patients, and never, ever, 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 ever put anything in their mouths, especially during an active seizure, because during that active seizure, safety is the priority. And when we think about that, there's if you are going into, you know, a hospital room and your patient has a history of seizures, you need to take into consideration what it is that you are going to do and what interventions you need to have in place before a seizure even happens. And that ultimately boils down back to ABCs. D, and then, you know, E. So airway, breathing, and circulation. Because in terms of airway and breathing, the top things that you need to make sure that you've had at the bedside are going to be oxygen, which most hospitals have the oxygen that's on the wall, but you need to have a device by which to give it to them. So is it going to be a nasal cannula? Is it going to be a non-rebreather mask? Is it going to be an oxy mask, a simple mask? What is it that you have in your hospital or in your clinical settings that are available to you to give someone oxygen in the event that they're having a seizure? The other big thing is suction equipment. You have to have suction equipment, because during that massive discharge of electrical activity inside the brain when someone starts to seize, they're not only are they not going to be adequately breathing, but they're also not going to be able to control or have their brain tell their throat to swallow saliva. And so we need to have suctioning available. And that airway equipment. So you want to make sure that you've got some sort of airway equipment available in the event that when they're seizing, right, if they enter into the status epilepticus phase where they're seizing for 5 minutes, even if you put oxygen on them, if they're not breathing, it's not going to go in them. So you need to have the ability to do some sort of airway or have a provider be able to put in some sort of airway if that's the case. These patients also need IV access. And then the other big thing when it comes down to safety is to make sure that the side rails on their beds actually have seizure padding. And the different hospitals use different sorts of things, but they do make specialized seizure precaution pads that go on the rails of the beds so that if someone were to seize and they start to go into a tonic-clonic seizure and flail their arms or their legs around, when they hit that side rail, they're not going to do significant damage to their skin. So when those seizures start, again, name of the game, observe and document. You're not going to be able to, if someone's immediately having a seizure, stop the seizure in process. So we want to note the time and how long that seizure basically takes when these patients are suffering from this. And the other component to that is when we think about nurses and what it is that we're doing at the bedside, and you've got your patient with a history of seizures, you know, if they, especially if they've been admitted for that, I always ask them about if they've ever had a seizure, when was the most recent time, what did it look like, do they know when it's getting ready to happen? Because sometimes they do. They will have those auras, they can smell the toast, or maybe they will have sudden changes in their facial expressions, and their behavior may change. So if you're in mid-conversation with someone and they just start to daydream off into the distance and they stop responding to you and they have a seizure history, perhaps they're experiencing an absence seizure in that process. So in the event that someone does actively have a seizure, safety is the priority. So we want to remove them from any way that they could potentially harm themselves. So if they're sitting or standing, they're like, I smell some toasty toast, and that's their aura, put them on the ground, because the goal is to protect their head and their body. And then it's ultimately, if they start seizing, back to the basics of the ABCs, supporting that airway and breathing and giving them the oxygen, using suction for the secretions that are created if needed, and preventing injury during the seizure. And that may mean that you put, you know, you try to slip a pillow under their head so that if their head is banging on the floor, you know, they're not going to crack their skull open. And then you stay with them. Do not restrain them. If they have loose clothing, you will want to loosen restrictive clothing. So if it's someone and you're in the grocery store shopping, and as an individual next to you has a tie around their neck and they start to seize, once you've, you know, basically established that they're not going to be seizing into, I don't know, glass jars of pickles or whatever, then in the process of staying with them and observing and documenting time and duration and what was happening during the seizure, and if you noticed anything before the seizure and you're staying with them, you want to loosen the restrictive clothing while you're making note of course, the type and the character and the progression of the movements that these individuals are having. Ultimately, in terms of interventions for a seizure, especially if it doesn't stop on its own, is to give IV medication to stop that seizure. And the medication that you give is going to depend on the type of seizure. Tonic-clonic seizures, for example, maybe you need to give a whole lot of lorazepam and diazepam, perhaps some IV phenytoin, which is Dilantin, or fosphenytoin, and you'll provide for privacy. And then after they have received those medications, we're going to monitor their behavior to see what does their level of consciousness do, how is their motor ability affected, or their speech, especially when they're in that post-ictal phase. Now, status epilepticus, I talked about this briefly at the beginning, the treatment for this is IV push benzodiazepine, a benzodiazepine like lorazepam or diazepam. If you don't have IV access and they are still seizing, right, this is a medical emergency, you have to address it. You can put oxygen on them, but they're not going to be breathing it in because they're seizing. So you give rectal diazepam. You can give the rectal diazepam, establish that airway, give them the oxygen, get an IV in them if you didn't have an IV in them to begin with, and draw a set of arterial blood gas and send those off. And then you will load these individuals with some sort of anti-seizure medication like IV phenytoin. So how do you know whether or not the seizure, whether or not your interventions worked? Well, if they seize, hopefully they come out of it without any grave injuries and the seizure stops. And then we really have to educate, especially those in the adult population, about seizure management and ensuring that they maintain their anti-seizure medication and they don't just abruptly stop it. Now, in the pediatric population, one of the big, there's a few big types of seizures that are for all intents and purposes, pediatric specific. And one of them is febrile seizures. And this usually occurs with temperatures that are higher than 38.8 degrees Celsius or 101.8 degrees Fahrenheit. And the seizure is occurring not because the child has any form of epilepsy, but it's occurring when the temperature rapidly increases, not after, but during the rapid increase of temperature is when these children will experience a febrile seizure. And classically, with that temperature that is rapidly increasing, that is normally happening in the household. And then one of the parents or both of the parents sees this happening, rings the emergency services, they get there. And usually by the time that they get to an emergency department, the seizure is over. Now, pediatric patients that have risk factors for the development of a febrile seizure are those kids that are younger than 18 months of age and individuals or pediatric kids that have had a fever less than 1 hour long. Because again, the febrile seizure results from the sudden rapid increase in the temperature. If they have a first degree relative that has also had a history of a febrile seizure, they are at higher risk for the development of this. And so it's just, those are things that you want to know about if you ask your patient, or, you know, if you've got parents that come in and they bring a child in, or, you know, in discussion with them, maybe you're working in a primary care clinic and they are having a child and they had a, you know, febrile seizure when they were younger, it predisposes children to that. Now, in the febrile seizures, in 95 to like roughly 98% of kids that end up with a febrile seizure, they don't have epilepsy. They don't have any neurologic damage. The way that we encourage households to manage febrile seizures is when those tiny tots have a fever, right? There used to be this old, and I even remember this when I was younger, about placing the child in a tepid bath of some sort to help gradually cool off the child from the fever that they're having. The problem with that is that it's ineffective. So don't encourage parents to put their children in tepid baths for the febrile seizure management. A lot of the other nursing care associated with this, it falls back to what we've already discussed, which is basically protect the pediatric patient from injury during the seizure. If it lasts longer than 5 minutes, now we're in status epilepticus land. And so that's an emergency services phone call to take them to the hospital. And the nursing management remains the same. So if you're taking care of this patient in the hospital, ensuring that you have everything that you need in your room in the event that they seize again. Now, absent seizures, I mentioned earlier, also falls in the pediatric category. These actually were formerly called petit mal seizures or lapses, and it's basically where during that absent seizure, there's a brief loss of consciousness for roughly 5 to 10 seconds, and there's like very little or no change in the pediatric patient's muscle tone, but what we might see is you might see some lip smacking or staring where they look like they're staring off in the distance, and it maybe you think they're daydreaming, or some like very mild twitching. And this, when someone has an absent seizure, almost always appears in childhood in the age range of 4 to 12 years of age. And it can just sort of happen suddenly. Individuals can have up to 20 events or more a day of these absent seizures. There's no warning necessarily. And this particular issue is often misdiagnosed as some sort of attention deficit disorder or inattention or inability to focus in schools because they are off staring in the distance when they are actually having an absent seizure. And that is absent seizures. Now, atonic seizures, again, is that sudden momentary loss of muscle tone, usually in patients that are going to have an atonic seizure. It occurs usually between the age of 2 and 5 years old. Again, this is where they suddenly lose all of the muscle tone, and so they will fall to the ground suddenly and often on their face, because most people are in a forward movement, and when this happens, the muscle tone of the legs and that forward movement, they usually just plow down and hit their face on the street. So in less severe seizures of an atonic seizure, you might just see that these individuals have their head and it falls forward. Basically, with the pediatric population, again, drug therapy for seizures are going to be the ones that we talked about. Usually, if it's an acute episode or status epilepticus episode, we're going to give some sort of medication to stop the acute phase of that seizure, whether it's an Ativan or maybe a diazepam. These patients are then also on long-term anti-seizure medication. And when, you know, someone has a seizure disorder and they put them, for example, on Keppra, and then the Keppra does not do the job of controlling it, they won't take that individual off of the Keppra, but they will add a secondary anti-seizure medication to their regimen. So you will just see people with seizure disorders with, some might have a very long list of anti-seizure medication and they're taking all of them because they don't want to pull someone off of a medication if in the event it is helping to some degree. The other thing in the pediatric population, and honestly, I'm not going to lie, I haven't read about it in the adult population, but the ketogenic diet, which is a high fat, low carb diet. And I'm not talking about the Atkins diet in any way, shape or form, but this is usually a diet that is often prescribed by a provider and then it is monitored and followed through with by a dietitian. And in kids specifically, the ketogenic diet really helps to reduce or prevent seizures in children that were really poorly or uncontrolled by medications for their seizure. And when you look at the literature, over half the children that usually go on to the ketogenic diet and follow it the way that the dietitian has prescribed, they usually have a 50% reduction in the number of seizures. Now, to the best of my ability, lots of the information that I read said that it's sort of somewhat unclear as to why this is working. But the root of it all is that it basically works by changing how the brain gets energy to function. And so if we can change that, then it seems that children have less seizures or seizure-like activity, and some can even be ultimately seizure-free. So when pediatric patients are put on seizure medication, right, in order to even consider, like maybe it's something specifically from childhood and maybe they're going to grow out of it, in order for them to consider when to discontinue some sort of pharmacologic management for a seizure disorder, that child has to have been seizure-free for 2 full years. They have to have had an EEG that is normal, and they usually will avoid discontinuing those medications during puberty or a phase in their life where there's really abrupt growth, because, you know, you don't want to make all of these systematic changes inside the body, especially when we're talking about hormones and the way that the body's growing and brain. But when they pull children off of pharmacologic management, the reoccurrence of seizures is possible within the first year following the cessation of that treatment. So it's just something to sort of keep an eye on and monitor. So that was the rough nitty gritty basics of different types of seizures, how your patients might present. Patient safety is the priority. Patient safety is the priority. ABCs, make sure you've got the oxygen and the suction, the seizure pads in the bedside. Suction's a really big one, though, that people will harp on because you really want to be able to clear the airway, especially if they've got quite a bit of saliva or foam brewing at the mouth. So that's all I've got. Go forth and keep on learning.
Thanks for listening to this episode. If you've liked what you heard, make sure you subscribe, like it in the platform that you're listening to. It helps with the algorithm to be able to share this with more people who are searching and interested in this sort of content. And have a great day.